A reading this morning from Buddhism Plain and Simple by Steve Hagen. Pick up a flower, a beautiful living fresh rose. It smells wonderful. It reveals a lovely rhythm in the swirl of its petals. A rich yet dazzling color, a soft velvety texture. It moves and delights us. The problem with the rose is that it dies. Its petals fall, it shrivels up, it turns brown and returns to the earth. One solution to this problem is to ignore the real rose and substitute a plastic one that never dies and never lives. But is a plastic rose what we want? No, of course not. We want a real rose. We want the one that dies. We want it because it dies, because it is fleeting, because it fades. It's this very quality that makes it precious. This is what we want, what each of us is, a living thing that dies. Like the rose, our bodies and minds are fleeting. In fact, everything in our experience, our bodies, our minds, our thoughts, our wants and needs, our relationships, they are all fleeting, changing, subject to death. We die in each moment, and again in each moment we're born. The process of birth and death goes on endlessly, moment after moment, right before our eyes. Everything we look at, including ourselves and every aspect of our lives, is nothing but change. Vitality consists of this very birth and death, this impermanence, this constant arising and fading away. They are the very things that make our lives vibrant, wonderful, and alive. Yet we usually want to keep things from changing. We want to preserve things, to hold onto them. As we shall see, this desire to hold onto something, to somehow stop, change its tracks, it is the greatest source of woe and horror and trouble in our lives.
So my sermon this morning is being present for others when it's hard. Being present with others and for others is an essential part, I think, of a good life. We're social beings. We evolved that way as a species. We are interdependent. I heard Brian Stevenson speaking, and I've shared this with the congregation before, claimed we could solve the problems of the world if we would do four things. And the first of those was be proximate. Be close to the people that we're dealing with. Being proximate involves more than being physically close. It involves being emotionally close. It involves being fully present. Sometimes this being present with others isn't easy. When we're among old friends, when life is good, and when we're secure and comfortable and without worry, it is easy. But you don't need my thoughts on how to be present with others when you're among good friends and all is right in the world. You can handle that on your own. My message this morning is about being present for one another when just being present is difficult, uncomfortable, even painful. I chose the reading that Margaret shared with you because I think we can learn a great deal from Buddhism teachings about the case, in this case, the futility of trying to escape the impermanence of change. It requires us to be present without trying to fix every situation or to hold off the inevitable change and the associated discomfort. When I'm preparing these sermons, I think about the congregation and how the message will be received and what my role is in minister. There are so many good talks on TV now, TED Talks, and innumerable others on YouTube, that I conclude that you don't come here just to hear a good talk. What I'm hoping you're coming, hoping what I can deliver is something that's important to the congregation, that is a play that speaks to something in your hearts at this time. And I'm aware of your need to feel sanctuary and to feel comforted and to be comfortable when you're here. But I'm also aware of the need to be uncomfortable, to confront you with ideas and suggestions that require you to move out of your comfort zone. For it's outside of our comfort zone where the growth happens, where we really learn. And Unitarian Universalists are all about spiritual growth, developing spiritual wisdom. In the material that I was reading for this sermon, I came across a quote which is going to become one of my favorites. It's from Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's a Buddhist practitioner. He's a professor of medicine emeritus. He's the creator of the Stress Reduction Clinic and the Center for Mindfulness in Medicine and Healthcare and Society at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He knows a bit about what he's speaking. He wrote, "You might be tempted to avoid the messiness of daily living, instead searching for the tranquility of stillness and peacefulness. This, of course, would be an attachment to stillness. And like any strong attachment, it leads to delusion. It arrests development and short-circuits the cultivation of wisdom." Here ends the quote. We can all improve our ability to be present for others, even when it's difficult, but we all have different capabilities in that regard. My point is that no one should cop out by accepting the notion that I'm just not good at that. You never get good at anything if you don't work at it. So what do I mean by presence? I've chosen this morning to talk about being present when it is difficult. So I'm talking about being with another person who is often in emotional distress. That could be expressed as grief or anger or confusion or fear or some combination of all of those. And many of us find our first reaction to such emotions to be avoidance. We don't want to be in a place of grief or anger or confusion or fear. And yet that's exactly what the person experiencing those emotions needs from us. A companion. Someone to assure them that they're not alone. And someone who will not pass judgment on their situation and on their worthiness. We know presence, true presence, when we see it and when we experience it. An emotional presence most often requires a physical presence because it's often manifest with a gentle touch, a hug. From a person in need of your presence physically, maybe leaning on you, maybe putting a head on your shoulder. We know when someone is present for us, is there for us, is sincerely listening without judgment, and without the need to propose a fix to the present situation. Presence is a reflection of love, and love is that will to extend yourself for the benefit of another human being. Mazen Kipp wrote, and this is on our wayside pulpit this morning, "At the end of the day, do others feel loved in your presence?" This, he said, is the spiritual bottom line. Presence is important. It's been said that if your absence doesn't affect them, then your presence never mattered. I maintain that Unitarian Universalism is first and foremost about giving meaning to our lives. Being present with and for others is one of the ways that our lives matter, and one of the ways that we give meaning to our own lives. Sharing life's experiences, the good and the bad, is essential to our health. And it opens the way to that feeling of oneness that sustains our being and our place in creation and our sense of wonder and our sense of appreciation for it all, for this amazing gift of life. We're living in a time of unprecedented communication opportunities, but a shared Facebook post, a like on Facebook, or a Twitter comment, or an Instagram is not presence. Amid all this technology, allowing instantaneous communications, we're suffering from an unprecedented loneliness and isolation. Many of our social ills can be traced to our sense of isolation and loneliness, True and deep and profound presence is the antidote. But it can be difficult. As a UU minister in training, I was required to work as a chaplain in a hospital. In my case, it was the Emory University Hospital in downtown Atlanta, Georgia. I was in strange territory. I was in a culture that I wasn't really familiar with. Every day I would go and knock on hospital doors 2, 3, and 4 times a day and ask if I could come in and visit a patient. I was able to consult the charts in advance, and I often knew that I was about to visit someone with a terminal condition, or someone who had lost a baby in delivery, or someone who was facing some major and frightening surgery, or any number of these very challenging situations. And unlike the medical staff, I had no role there other than to be present for the patient and their family at this difficult time in their lives. I couldn't just come in and be busy. You know, I couldn't just take temperature. I couldn't just take pulse. I just had to be there and be present with the people in their time of difficulty. People from all walks of life, all religious backgrounds or none. The goal was always to meet people at whatever point they were at and to be truly present for them. In those situations, you overcome your own fear and your own sense of inadequacy, but only through practice. The first weeks in the hospital were really difficult. Outside of the hospitals, in everyday life, we encounter people in all kinds of stressful situations. And sometimes we may feel the need to vent our own emotions, be that anger, rage, or frustration. But when you're focused on your own emotions, your own needs, you can't be present for another person. Being present for others requires a sacrifice on our part. You give up precious time when you're doing this. And you give up your own emotional needs in the service of others. And that sense of presence, that emotional bond, the synchronizing of emotion and spirit isn't always possible. That deep presence requires a willingness on both sides to expose personal emotions and associated vulnerability. It isn't always possible, and it shouldn't always be expected that just showing up will result in true presence. I still grieve over my inability to connect with one terminally ill patient. I remember doing my best, thinking that I was making a connection, and then thanking the patient for allowing me into their life. I'll always remember the response. It was, "I never let you in, Norm." There had been that barrier between the two of us. It wasn't a true presence, because the person wasn't ready for it, because maybe we hadn't known each other long enough. Whatever the circumstance. "I never let you in, Norm." Often people don't let you in. All you can do is be there and ask. Establishing that real emotional bond of presence isn't easy, and it requires a willingness on the part of both parties. But presence, when it happens, is joyful. It's not always hard work. When you truly connect with another person, when you are present for them in a time of their need, it can be a source of profound joy. The English poet Dinah Maria Lowcock Craig put it this way: "Oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts nor measure words, but pouring them all right out, just as they are. Chaff and grain together, certain that the faithful hand will take and sift them, keeping what is worth keeping, and then with the breath of kindness, blow the rest away." Some of the work we're doing in the church involves presence across cultural barriers, and this is particularly difficult. Differing cultural backgrounds can make being present for others particularly difficult. Nothing short of hard work. and the work that this beloved community has done with Middle Eastern refugees, I've experienced how challenging it is to bridge that cultural divide. To invite people into your life and to be invited into theirs. It requires a persistence and a willingness to change from those who would reach out to establish true presence. Similarly, with our Truth and Reconciliation Task Team, we're looking to bridge a cultural divide with our Indigenous community. And again, we know this won't be easy. I share this quote by Leroy Littlebear, a Canadian Indigenous elder. Any individual within a culture is going to have his or her own personal interpretation of the collective cultural code. However, the individual's worldview has its roots in the culture, that is, in the society's shared philosophy, values, and customs. If we are to understand how Aboriginal and Eurocentric worldviews clash, and they do, we need to understand how the philosophy, the values, and the customs of Aboriginal cultures differ from those of Eurocentric cultures. To be truly present with our Indigenous neighbors as we work in the Truth and Reconciliation process will require time and effort on our part to understand the cultural differences that would stifle true presence. So in conclusion, does anyone question the value of being present for others in a time of their need of our support? I think not. We might question our ability to do that, but we don't question the need. And we recognize that that can be difficult. Are we prepared to make the effort, knowing it will involve disappointment, maybe even rejection of our efforts? Is this part of our individual path to spiritual growth? I'll close by repeating those words by John Backett Zinn. You may be tempted to avoid the messiness of daily living for the tranquility of stillness and peacefulness. This, of course, would be an attachment to stillness. And like any strong attachment, it leads to delusion. It arrests development and short-circuits the cultivation of wisdom. May we all engage with the messiness of life, and may we strive to be present for one another, now and always. May it be so. Amen.